Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is my interview with the director and writer for Love Lies Bleeding, Rose Glass, and the film's star, Katie O'Brien.
The excitement in the air is palpable. The atmosphere is electric. A celebration of history in the making.
What is this place? You're looking pretty good in there. There's some pretty serious lines going. Yeah? Why don't you want me working for your dad?
Well, he's a psycho.
I saw that big girl. That you two are maybe together.
Do you like guns?
I prefer to know my own strength.
That's not what I'm paying you for.
If you touch her, I'm gonna tell them everything you ever did.
Are you threatening me?
We gotta get out of here.
Let's just keep driving.
I fucking love you, you idiot.
I love you too.
You'll regret this.
Oh yeah?
Hi, I'm Matt Negley with Next Best Picture. I'm being joined right now with filmmaker Rose Glass and star of the film Love Lies Bleeding, Katie O'Brien.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, ladies. I am so excited to talk to you about this film. This film really knocked me on my ass when I saw it at its world premiere at Sundance. I love me a good neo-noir, especially one that mixes elements that range from... Gosh, I saw so many influences in this, from Wild at Heart, True Romance, a bunch of others. I want to start off with you, Rose. Can you talk to me a little bit about just some influences that found their way into this story for you? And what was the intention that you were coming to the story with following your very successful feature debut, St. Maud?
I think coming to this next one, I was just excited to get a chance to make another film. And so I just wanted to do something really fun, but sort of try something that I wasn't sure if I could pull off or not. And in terms of like the cinematic references, I think because of when and where the film takes place, there's sort of so many sort of big famous classic films and some of the ones that you mentioned that feed into that sort of time and place, that I was, if anything, I was a bit self-conscious about not wanting to overly reference other films, because it's going to happen anyway, because so many of those films just sort of like seep into the cultural sort of consciousness. So, you know, right. I still haven't seen True Romance. I didn't watch Wild at Heart, or that, you know, I'd never seen Thelma and Louise until post. I think I sort of like deliberately avoided watching it, because I just knew I'd get too self-conscious and be like, oh no, that bit's too much like this, that bit's like... But probably a lot of those films, it's just a lifetime of the sort of omnipresent influence of a whole range of American films.
I even got a sense, just due to the location alone, from Albuquerque, New Mexico, I was like, man, I'm being reminded of like the best elements of something like Breaking Bad while watching this, where it's just ordinary people caught up in very... For us, you know, that wouldn't get involved in such things, just very unimaginable, dangerous circumstances.
That's what you think.
Exactly. If you were putting similar circumstance, maybe you'd do the same thing that these guys do.
I don't know. These are some really, really bad people that they're getting mixed up with here. So, but Katie, going over to you, I feel like this in many ways, especially when you first hear about it, it must feel sort of almost like just a perfect marriage of your past experiences and what you're striving to do now as an actor. Can you tell me a little bit about just this role and how it spoke to you?
Yeah, I've been joking that I'm like a serious method actor because I've been prepping for this for 10 years. but I definitely obviously can relate to like a queer bodybuilder from the Midwest. And so when that was like just the general pitch at the beginning, I'm like, oh my God, yes, absolutely. And then to find out that it's this character that has all these layers is even more incredible. And it's, you know, from a time period I'm really passionate about. And I think it is like this glory age of bodybuilding. And it just, all of the little elements, like every little bit of it came together to be this perfect concept and script. And then there was this weird kind of thing where I was like, who is this made for except for me, Kristen, and Rose? Because like, I didn't know if audiences would enjoy something like this, but it was also, I didn't care because it was like such a fun, cool project to work on. And that's, at the end of the day, all I really want to do. It's like, I want to make movies or be able to participate in movies that I want to see and that I want other people to like maybe take something from or feel something for or not be bored going into the movie theater anymore, you know, just any of that.
Yeah, well, it's certainly not boring. I'll definitely give the film that for sure. And then some. But I want to know, just I'm always curious about how these things come together. Katie, did you find Rose or Rose, did you find Katie? How did the two of you come together on this?
I don't know what happens on your end.
I think you kind of found us. I mean, because we were working with the casting directors, Betty May, who were great. But, you know, they were kind of like getting so many people to tape and like searching for Jackie for a long time. And we were struggling and getting a bit nervous, to be honest. And then I think they put out a sort of casting call on Twitter. And then somebody who's a fan of yours sent it to you. And then you got in touch. So it was kind of...
That's amazing.
You found us, I'd argue. So, and then she appeared and I was like, thank God.
And Katie, going back to like your background too, just working in martial arts, being a former police officer as well. Can you tell me about like how some of that like found its way into the physicality of your performance? Is there like a moment on set or a moment of stunts where you thought to yourself, oh, good, this is coming in handy here?
Stunt-wise, it was pretty light. You know, I'm used to doing a lot more heavy lifting for sure. I think I delivered... Did I even throw a punch? I don't know.
Probably compared to some of the other stuff you've done, it's a bit lighter, but there's like a few bits where you're like, you know, JJ, you've got a fighting there. And Katie's like martial artist anyway, so that was, that was pretty fun.
Not the hardest part, but there was definitely a moment where, you know, I have to hold a gun a lot, and I'm like, Jackie doesn't do this. So had to hand it to Rose. I'm like, let me see how you hold the, you know, I have to relearn how to not hold a gun, right? Or how to hold it like someone who had picked it up for kind of maybe the first time or is still afraid of it.
See how I do it. Like, you're like, do you want me to do the whole like closing the eye thing? Are you not meant to do that?
I do. I don't know. Yeah.
And then like when we were doing, there's a scene in a police station where Jackie's getting booked and fingerprints and stuff. And it was kind of like, oh no, you're doing that wrong.
Yeah.
And you share many of your scenes opposite Kristen Stewart in this movie, who I think is one of our greatest actresses working today. Can you just talk to me a little bit about, like, just as a scene partner, what she's able to give you within a scene and just how that informs your performance then as her co-star in this movie?
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
Yeah, it's cool working opposite Kristen. I think we have kind of different styles, and I tried to see if some of it worked for me, and you know, you take what you can and get rid of what doesn't. But she's very physical, which was surprising. But like, you know, before a really intense scene, emotional scene, she's jumping up and down, like some screaming happening sometimes, you know, really getting into the moment in a very physical way, like literally raising her heart rate. So, you know, it helps put you in that scene. You're like, okay, yeah, stakes are high. We're here. This is it. You know, we're in a big moment. And then otherwise, you know, we can kind of be like, we can both kind of be almost in the moment and guarded sometimes too. So when we're having those like really lovely intimate scenes and stuff, there's still like, there's this wanting to expose yourself, but feeling a little bit like, you know, holding back. So it's mm-hmm. kind of a, it was a cool dynamic. And then also, you know, working with Ed, he's a very different style as well. So it was just cool to see these really well-known actors that, you know, I've up until then only seen on my screen, their processes and how different even they are from each other, and getting to, I don't know, play around in their worlds.
Absolutely. Yeah. Rose, I got to ask, I feel like there are, like there's violence in movies, and then there's violence in this movie compared to some others out there. And I have to imagine that that definitely is a creative choice. I love it. It's shocking. It made me gleefully giggle in my seat when I saw it happen, because I just love seeing filmmakers just go for it in moments like that. Can you talk to me just a little bit about those shocking moments of brutality and what went into creating those?
Well, I'm glad you used the word gleeful, because that's kind of, I'd say, one that I would, a word that I'm sort of like, certainly what I felt making and writing a lot of this film. And yeah, the violence, I mean, it's kind of, it's almost like operatic, some of it. So it's, I guess that's just sort of what came out. I kind of like enjoyed thinking about it like a sort of choreography. And I don't know, it just felt like the sort of film where, you know, you want all of the characters' emotions dialed up to this very intense kind of feelings, so the violence had to be very violent, the sex had to be very sexy, and but the whole film hopefully has, like, it's got a humor to it as well and a playfulness. So obviously violence in reality is obviously terrible, whatever the circumstances, and very serious can be, so it's kind of, I enjoyed looking at it through this slightly more heightened melodramatic kind of lens. And that's, I mean, that's the fun thing about doing violence and terrible things in films, is that it's not reality, and we get to experience some of these darker things from the safety of a comfy cinema seat.
I remember you scarred me for life with the end of St. Maud, and I will never forgive you for that. But at the same time, I love you for it. So thank you.
You wrote some lovely stuff about it, I think, as well. Thank you.
Yes. And here you deliver another extremely memorable ending. I was curious heading in if there would be sort of this almost connective tissue between the two films in that regard. There are some similarities, but this one in particular, I was like, wow, Rose really knows how to end her movies on a particularly memorable moment. I don't care about spoilers. I hope that by the time my audience listens to this, they have seen the movie as well. I need to know what went into, both for you, Rose, and Katie, just creating that gargantuan moment.
It was really fun for me. Yeah, spoiler, she's a giant at the end, so that was really fun. I mean, it was the first time I, because, you know, we obviously like shot the kind of like plate shots of like Lou and her dad kind of reacting to Jackie appearing like this, so for me it was the first time I'd shot any stuff where you've got actors reacting to like tennis balls on sticks. And then obviously we shoot Katie against gray screen in the place where we shot the gym, so that was just sort of new technical side to me, which was sort of strange and fun.
But it's also a low budget film, so you can't go too reliant on CGI, so I imagine there's got to be a lot of old school practical tricks at play too, right?
Well, you get very kind of like, you start counting the number of shots where you can see the giants very carefully, because each one costs quite a bit of money to sort of put it all together. Mm-hmm.
You worked with me a lot on the movement leading into it, and like stuff that I had to do with, you know, like opening my mouth extra wide and cracking my neck a little and all this creepy stuff and flexing, you know, certain ways. So it was like, I don't know, I felt like I was doing kind of a fun little like exercise. It was like a
like when you're sort of transforming those bits, the outtakes from that are really fun, because we sort of like wanted to have lots of options to play with in post about exactly how the sort of like hulking kind of shot works. So that was, I was like, okay, now it's kind of moving up your back and then it's fun, all that stuff, like you just feel
that's interesting to watch.
It's like stretched really cool. It's like stretched away a contortionist would stretch or something like that.
Exactly. That's all the most fun stuff to get to do.
Yeah, absolutely. The soundtrack in this movie also is awesome. I loved it. I cannot wait to listen to it in full when it gets released. Can both of you tell me if you have a single favorite needle drop, whether it's because of how it works within the context of the movie or just the song in general?
Well, Rose gave me like a cool playlist that I got to listen to kind of as I was going along. And we did have the Color Box Moon is Blue song kind of right off the bat. It's like, that's going to be the bodybuilding song.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
My partner actually worked on the film as like a music consultant. His name's Yeet Bulbul. And so he was like, so he did these... like the playlists for you and Kristen, like we were trying to figure out what music each of these characters might listen to. And so like, you know, Clint Mansell obviously did this amazing score, but there's a lot of commercial tracks in there as well. And it's all kind of, he just found all these really great sort of slightly forgotten gems from the 80s, a lot of kind of slightly more left field, ambient industrial kind of tracks which are sort of peppered throughout it. So there's a lot that I really like. There's a couple of I love the Color Box Moon is Blue, the bodybuilding routine as well. And then there's a couple of tracks used by this Japanese woman called Shiho Yabuki, and it's this kind of who apparently is a musician and a magician. So she's very cool, but it's this slightly twinkly sci-fi sounding stuff, which we score a lot of the scenes with Lou and Jackie by themselves, which made me think of them both as being like slightly cosmic alien lovers kind of floating through the universe.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff in there.
And as we wrap up here and come to the end, I need to know, Katie, I think for you, this is going to open up a tremendous amount of doors. I know it's not your debut, but it almost does feel for a lot of people, this is going to be their discovery of you in many ways. And I'm just curious to know, like, what you have your eyes set on for the future, whatever that may be.
I mean, I hope I get to do more projects like this, something that allows me to kind of like explore and grow. Not necessarily just literally.
Hey!
Yeah.
But I mean, it's funny because, you know, everyone says that like last year, they're like, oh, this is a big year for you. And I'm like, I don't know, nothing's happened, you know? And then it's the same. So I never really... until something happens, I never believe it's going to happen. But I am hoping to do a project. It's kind of in the psycho horror realm later this year. That is also very queer and really cool. And then I don't know. I just want to pay my bills too. Like, if we're being real.
No, totally understandable. And yeah. Rose, same thing to you before we leave here.
I'm sort of writing something at the moment, which I'm really excited about, but I shan't say any more just yet.
That's totally fine. We look forward to it because you're two for two as far as we're concerned right now. So ladies, both, thank you for the time, and I hope everyone gets a chance to check out Love Lies Bleeding if you have not already.
Nice.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to my interview with the writer and director for the film Love Lies Bleeding, Rose Glass, along with the film's star, Katie O'Brien, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. Love Lies Bleeding will be released in theaters by A24 on March 8th before expanding wide on March 15th. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you all so much for listening, as always, and we will see you all next time.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right. I've never done it. No, right.